All right. Well, we'll have some time at the end as well. So the Buddhist path of practice is an engaged practice. Really, the Buddha said that the only thing that we really own are our actions. And so to be really careful with how we develop, you know, what type of actions we participate in. And to bring awareness to these, right? Mindfulness. To frame up our inner and outer worlds, internal mindfulness and external mindfulness, and the relationship between the two, so how we engage actively with, you know, with one another, with our communities and our economic and political worlds. It's all included. So I want to talk about wise action, but I want to talk about in particular these themes of wise action through stabilization, through support. So what are we exactly engaging with? I think that the Buddha would ultimately say what we're engaging with is our kind of often reflexive tendencies to try to fix, change, and control things to become more comfortable, but in doing so, creating more stress for ourselves and other people. And we're born into a biological unit, nervous system, mind, body, that wants to be comfortable. So on the grand scale, you could call these this stream that we're going against, right? Against the stream of greed, hatred, and delusion. I think if we look in our larger world, I don't feel personally that these words are too far off from what I see and what I witness. I maybe have a little bit harder of a time bringing it home as far as it greed, hatred, and delusion living and existing in my mind and through my actions. So greed in the sense of, you know, what to get, what I need to acquire, what to I need to hold on to, whether it's status or some type of sensual pleasure, some type of what's the next thing to get, to have. When am I going to get there? When will I finally get the recognition that I deserve? When will I finally get the praise? Or when will people finally look up to me or respect me? And when can I have the right relationship? And when the realm of hatred, tendency towards aversion, resentment, resistance, pushing against. You know, when I can be better when I get rid of this, when things are different. If I could meditate if my leg didn't hurt, if my mind would calm down. Aversion, aversion, aversion. And so we're born into an existence, the existential reality of the world in which we live, inner and outer, is one of pain and pleasure, of both. So even though we want it to be one and not the other, we get both. And so how do we skillfully or wisely engage with a realm that contains both? How do we learn to hold pain and to care for pain instead of running from pain and avoiding pain? How do we learn to enjoy and appreciate pleasure instead of digging our claws into what's here, what we need to get? And against the stream of delusion, I think ultimately the realm of delusion is one of, at the base, the nervous system trying to protect me, Andrew. Here I am. And this is what the mind thinks of most of the time. And it's not self-centered in the sense that that's what I want. It's just that's what this thing does, is it thinks about me and my well-being and my place and if you like me or you don't like me and Have you noticed the mind thinking about itself quite a bit? And so as we look at this fourth factor of the path, practice, wise action, we're informed by the first couple factors of the path, which is view and intention. So we act oftentimes in accordance with what we believe about something or how we feel about it. Mindfulness helps us to become more aware and less unconscious to how we perceive things. And it helps us to support us as we start to look at more of the picture. Samaditti, this first factor of the Eightfold Path, wise view. Sama actually means more something like complete. So we're trying to get the complete picture. And even in psychology and neuroscience, they talk about the subjective bias, how we have a tendency to act and react often by what we believe or what we perceive based upon past memories and experiences. So feelings, how we felt about something, comes up when I experience the same thing or something similar again. And we react oftentimes the same way. And so what we normally do in here is we talk about the factor of wise action as these training precepts that we undertake to refrain from causing harm, to refrain from taking what's not freely offered, to refrain from dishonest or manipulative speech, to refrain from harmful sexual activity, and to refrain from intoxicants that lead to heedlessness. But it's problematic because in our culture, in the Western culture, we have a legalistic frame for ethics, which means that we have a frame of what's right and wrong. So without really understanding that, what we're doing is trying to change the ways that we perceive and therefore act in the world, what we usually tend to do instead is we tend to think we're good or bad for acting in a certain way. And this finds its way into Buddhist practice. Even our legal system is what's punishable or what's passable in the eyes of a judge. And so whether we have grown up in this type of religious idea of sinfulness and righteousness or good or bad or right or wrong, our culture is affected by it and actually is one of the fetters to awakening. It's one of the things that gets in the way of ease and well-being, is holding to fixed views. And so how do we start to view things with mindfulness more immediately and directly and free from the screen of right and wrong? The first thing we need to do is we need to learn how to slow down. And I am convinced that this is the most important part of the practice for our culture. Just to slow down. The aim of this wise action of slowing down is stability. And it's the action, actually, oddly enough, of non-action. So what we're really trying to do is to not do, which is the hardest thing to do. I don't know if you've recognized this, but I have. The Buddha said to practice mindfulness with the intention to be free from all desire and discontent in regard to the world. And so what he encouraged is when we're developing the practice of mindfulness to go to, as it says in the discourse, the root of a tree. So the idea here is not necessarily you have to go sit underneath a tree, but to be secluded, to go away from the world, to get away. right, into practice in a way that has this intention to put aside all of our desire and discontent for the world, all of our judgments about what's good and bad and what we like and don't like and what I hope it's like tomorrow and what it was like yesterday, and to really to bring that intention into the practice. Slow down, slow down. One of my favorite quotes that I've quoted here quite often is a novelist, Milan Kundera, writes, "Speed, the demon of speed, is often associated with forgetting and with avoidance, and slowness with memory and confronting. We move slowly when we want to listen to ourselves. We move slowly when we want to listen to others and the world around us. We move slowly when we want to accept ourselves. The rush of contemporary life overwhelms us in our ability to observe, to hear, to stop, and to wonder. Society and its speed wants to blow out the tiny flame of memory." Emotions are speed. Living in this world of, as the Buddha calls it, this and that, getting caught up in the this and that of the world is speed, and it keeps us emotionally activated. Not that emotions are the problem, but emotions literally mean to move through. It's the kind of etymology of that word. So they're movement. They're moving us towards opportunity and away from threat. And so when we get caught up in the this and the that, what happens is, without knowing it, we've decided that, you know, being alive, being here in the here and now, what we're forgetting with our speed is the here and now. Being alive is no longer good enough. And just being here, as I am, with all I am, you know, slowing down and seeing, can I allow that to just be good enough? With my anxiety, with my fears, with my, you know, what's available. What we often do is we live between the last thing and the next thing. And to emphasize, of course, this isn't our fault. I mean, this is just kind of what the mind's job is it strategizes the last thing and the next thing. But with this intention to put aside, right, and this intention to stabilize and to slow down, and to support that intention through a practice and through a community and through a commitment to a spiritual practice, you know, that is made more possible. So as we slow down, we practice embodied awareness. So where do we slow down to? That's kind of the question, right? And so the Buddha said that our world, our experience, and what we're experiencing in the here and now is comprised of our five senses and the thinking mind. And so really the first foundation, or really the first area of interest when we're slowing down, is the body. We know even in psychology that the body is the area of emotion regulation, that our attention, by coming into the body, we can begin to hold and have space for the energy of the nervous system. We can start to regulate it. I like to think of the nervous system as like an electrical unit, and usually this thing is the circuit that's just feeding it. And so by using the attention, which is in the mind, to ground into the body, what happens is that we don't feed it anymore. But unfortunately, we still have to deal with the rushing up of what's been left over. This is why when we sit and meditate, sometimes we get really restless, or we get really tired, or we feel overwhelmed. It's like stopping a train. You can't just pull the brakes and get off. It's got to have a little bit of time to slow down and to stabilize. And so this practice that we did tonight, you know, seeing if there's a ground available in the body, what can be felt and known in this present experience is stable. And not that it's stable and it's always going to be one thing, but that there's the gravity, there's the weight of the body, there's the weight of the hands, there's the space of the sound around the body, right? There's a lot to look into here that can help the mind have a place to rest. So stability, embodied awareness, helps create a body of safety, a regulated nervous system, and it also helps to gauge the impact of what we're experiencing, knowing our emotions. And becoming more familiar with the inner landscape. This is the Dharma. The Dharma is the map, but the terrain is here, right? So the map is telling us, okay, go into the body, you know, slow down, bring the awareness into the body, into the mind, into the emotional experience, and to see what's there, to see what the affect or see what the impact of the mind and the body is. They say that the two wings of our practice is to see clearly and to respond wisely. So when I slow down, I see things. I don't know if you've ever been caught up like in a ton of anger or resentment, right? That's a really hot emotion. So I'm driving down the road and I'm just pissed off and I'm, you know, I'm late to where I'm supposed to go because I left 5 minutes late and now I'm, you know, caught in traffic and I didn't know that the roads, you know, shut down, and then I have to go this other way, and then someone calls me, and they called me earlier, and I don't know why they're calling me again, and don't they just know, you know, and so the emotion, the hot emotion, what happens is it impacts my ability to slow down, you know, and then I just reflexively react. I do the anger, right? And Dave was here a couple weeks ago, and I like what he said. He said, you know, all that worry, he's talking about worry, all that worry knows how to do is worry. All that anger knows how to do is anger, right? These are operating systems. These are emotions that we've been programmed. We know how to relate to them. We relate differently. Some people, when they don't experience anger outward, they experience it inward, right? And some people, they don't show or express sadness outward. And some people do all the time, right? But we have our emotions, and we need to start to, you know, settle into that, to stabilize that, to be with that, and to see what the impact is. To see clearly, and then with the impact, we know what's needed. Well, when I'm hurt, when it's painful, there's concern, there's compassion, there can be an opening, a caring. When there's joy or excitement, there can be an opening, there can be an appreciation, a gratitude. What I've found is that the body has an emotional intelligence, that it actually knows how to do the programs if I get out of the way. Right? If I actually start to say, oh, this is anger, okay, oh man, wow, alright, this one's here, this one's heavy. Slow down, be with it. All right, what does it need? How is it? What does it need? Slowing down, I like this, the monks and the Buddhist lineage practice, they call them austerities, which are basically taking up practices, celibacy, taking up, you know, the commitment to only eat once or twice a day, to only have one or two pairs of clothes. These are kind of these austerities or these practices of simplicity that really to help to not get the mind as caught up in this and that, right, in the world. And so they encourage that. And the Buddha said the most supreme, or I don't know if he said the most, but he said the supreme austerity is patience, patient endurance. He said nothing's more just simplistic and important than good old practicing of patience. The Dharma can't be figured out. This is an interesting thing. We talk about insight meditation, vipassana. That's the type of meditation we practice, insight meditation. You have Nashville insight. You have Chicago insight, San Francisco insight. Show me how many Dharma talks have been given on how to do insight meditation. Not many. Because insight is the result of sitting down, breathing in, breathing out, opening the receptive awareness without judgment to what's being experienced, seeing how it's impacting, being curious in that, investigating that. The mind can't know wisdom. You know, the body, the mind, as it interconnects, it recognizes. It recognizes things. It says, oh, that's this. That's what this is. This is clinging. I can't figure out clinging with my by thinking about it. I mean, I can know I'm clinging, but to let go, right? You know how much we talk about letting go? We talk about letting go all the time. Has anyone ever told you how to do that? You just let go. Yeah, I want to fucking let go, but I don't know how to fucking let go. Right? Because by knowing the pain, right? By fully knowing, and the mind recognizes, the mind-body recognizes that. It doesn't learn about it and say, okay, fine, I'll stop. No, the mind and the body, it recognizes the suffering, and it says, oh, this isn't good. It recognizes it as harmful. And it says, oh, man. So this takes some stability, it takes some slowing down to see that, you know, to be with that, and the patience, the supreme austerity of patience. Last time I talked about communication and spent some time talking about the most important, for me, aspect of communication is putting effort into listening, active listening and attunement, into the nonverbal communication, into presence, into being with someone, you know, or a room of people, and, you know, attuning, making eye contact, feeling the body language, you know, listening to what's being said, this embodied awareness, this slowing down, this is opening to what's here, and then being patient with what's here. And so, it sounds like a good idea, but we need supports to slow down, right? We need help. And so part of the support, just very plainly and simply, is coming here, right? We drove all the way out here to do nothing, as I said at the beginning. That's basically what we came to do. And go on meditation retreats and explaining to my family what I'm doing. They're like, hold on, let me get this straight. So you're not talking to anyone. Yeah, I'm not talking to anyone. Okay, you're not writing anything. Yeah, you're not writing anything. You're only eating two meals a day. Yeah, I'm only eating two meals a day. And then you meditate. Yeah, you meditate. So what do you do? Right? You know, that environment of retreat, the environment of this group supports that. We're all here trying to not do together. We're all here trying to, you know, wake up. And what are we waking up to? Mindfulness means to remember the ground. What are we, as Milan Kundera says, forgetting with all of this speed? He said speed wants to blow out the tiny flame of memory. What are we forgetting? We're forgetting this. This is what we're forgetting. My mind forgets this all the time. That's pretty much what my mind does most of the time, is it forgets that I'm right here. And so supporting with the ethical practices, supporting through non-harming, supporting through ease. We support by nurturing and taking care of the mind, not getting mad at it. Or redirecting it, like holding its hand like it's a little kid, and you say, no, it's okay. We're not getting food after the meditation group yet, we're here. With ease, with kindness, with this quality of metta, with goodwill, we support, you know, the mind from turning into this right or wrong or good or bad, or this kind of overwhelming shame that can be a deterrent from really doing anything at all. An honest recognition. The Buddha said that there are they're called the two guardians, Hiri and Otipa, which mean a healthy sense of regret and a healthy sense of fear at having done something that you might reap consequences from. So regret is good. And awareness, mindfulness, although it's not always good news, the good information of mindfulness is sometimes our regret. It's like, oh, dude, that didn't hurt. That is actually the heart looking out for me. When I do something and I feel bad about it, that's good information. Because if you don't have that information, you're a sociopath, right? You kill people for fun. So I hope you have a little bit of regret in your life. So we want to support, we want to support with goodwill, we want to support with compassion, we want to support with forgiveness, we want to support with appreciation. But the best thing to support for human beings is behavior. And this is the approach of a lot of psychology, behavioral conditioning. Basically, if we act in certain ways that are in line with our values, meaning that don't bring up this feeling of regret and fear of consequence, if we act in those ways, what happens, we'll in turn have a more stable mind and we'll think and feel better. Right? So it's this really hard thing where it's like, I'm not doing the behaviors so I'm good or bad or right or wrong or praiseworthy in the eyes of someone else, but doing them because it's what gives ease to the heart. It actually creates goodwill. It creates a stable mind. Undertaking the trainings of speech, of action, of livelihood, the trainings of being wise and careful in my communication, being wise and careful in what I do through my direct action and what I choose to do for work, in my relationship to money, my relationship to sex. These are all included as a part of my reflection. They say that if we don't consider the Buddhist path an ethical path first and foremost, what happens is it's like trying to row a boat that's still tied to the dock. You're exerting all this effort to practice mindfulness and to, sit down and meditate, but we're not living in a way that really uses that awareness in a way that generates goodwill and non-harm. So harm is situational. Harm is not black and white. Harm is, is known through our experience. And we're oftentimes in very gray situations where what is harmful is hard to tell. What's most important, I find, and we talk a lot in my profession, they talk about ethical dilemmas all the time because we have these ethical standards. And what's most important is that I'm actually asking that question. The most important thing is that I'm interested in what's harm going to cause and generate harm, and trying to do the least harm. That, I feel like, is the encouragement of the ethical practice here, is, you know, what may cause harm, what may be the outcome, to be interested in that, and what ways could I act that, you know, would cause less. An ethical life, as we undertake trainings in ethics and we start to be interested in living a life of well-being, a life of non-harming, you know, that I think it's really important to be honest about the reality that this should be inconvenient. The Dharma should start to, as Dave always says, the Dharma will fuck your life up, right? The Dharma should mess you up a little bit. It should make things a little bit inconvenient. You know, maybe at times, meaning that there are relationships I have to pull out of. Meaning at times there are jobs I have to pull out of. Meaning at times there are jobs that I have to do. Some of the things that we do or that we use cause us harm, both to ourselves and others. But it's also important to know that what's caused harm also has been a strategy that we've used to buffer ourselves from loneliness and from fear and from anxiety and insecurities. So as we start to change our behavior, we have to look at, like, when we let something go or we practice renunciation, we practice the letting go of a certain activity or behavior, what happens is there's oftentimes the underlying thing that it's been serving to protect us from. Right, and so we will need support. And even reflecting, and part of the support that I like to incorporate is a daily, you know, mindfulness is a contemplative practice. One of the ways that we use mindfulness is contemplation. We actually reflect on our life. It's not just present time. We actually consider and contemplate the ways that we think, speak, and act. And we take an inventory of our behavior. We reflect, you know, we take the refuges, we take the precepts, we reflect actively on what is happening in our life. So in my day-to-day life, a question I can ask or reflect on is what takes up the most time? What takes up the most time in my life? And is that what's most important to me? And then again, to like watch, not to have any judgments over that question, but just to be interested. What actually takes up more time than anything else in my day-to-day? And is that the most important thing to me? And most of us, it's work, right? A lot of us, it's work. It doesn't mean we can necessarily get rid of that, but to be interested in, okay, to ask that question, what is taking up the most time, is it even important to me? Is my job even important to me, period? You know, or is it this relationship, or is it this video game, or is it this money, status?
Sleep.
Or sleep, that's right. Sleep's pretty important.
Very important, man.
That's right. What do I need? I like these kind of three questions go together. What in my life do I need to change? What will happen if nothing changes? And if I decide to make a change, what will I need to make it happen? So what in my life needs to change? And what will happen if nothing changes? That's the hard truth. That's the hard question. Carl Jung talks about the shadow side of turning our attention towards what's difficult. Mindfulness frames it up. It's like coming in the room with a flashlight when the lights are off, and you have this flashlight, and over time you're getting a better flashlight. You know, you're getting into the corners, and you're starting to really kind of dig a little bit deeper. What in my life actually needs to change? I'm going to go looking for that shit. I'm going to fucking look for what needs to be changed in my life. And I'm going to consider what will happen if I continue this behavior. Ajahn Sucitto says, if you back away from a corner, it just gets darker. What do I need to let go of? What is in getting in the way of me letting it go? And if I decide to let it go, what will I need to practice in its place? If we let go of something, that's what I talked about earlier, if we let go of something that's been serving a purpose, you know, that's so we can sit with that, but we're going to need some support. We're going to need, as the Buddha says, the words of a wise friend. We're going to need community. We're going to need to fill our time, maybe. Maybe that thing was taking up a lot of time, that behavior. And so I like to look at this as like, how can we give ourselves a break without letting ourselves off the hook? How can we both be kind and gentle and caring and understanding and patient with ourselves as we, you know, take into our awareness more of our lives while also not letting that fall into the shadow? The best way to do this, I think, in my experience, I think we're all different, is community, is support. Having other people that are doing this with me makes it way more likely that I'm going to make the changes that I need to make. You know, people that are trying to practice non-harming, people that are trying to practice wise and careful speech and looking at the ways that they engage in the world, you know, and encouraging and not calling out as we do often, but calling people in and encouraging people by modeling through our behavior. I love this about 12 steps, is they always encourage people to look at their side of the street in 12 steps. And this is, I feel, really the personal responsibility that's a part of, that we all have to do the work ourselves. That it's my, you know, so if I want to change, right, it's Gandhi or someone says, be the change that you want to see in the world, that it is my role, it's my goal, it should be my goal of practice to embody that, you know. And so first we start, we just slow down, we just show up, we find support, and we keep going with patience, we keep going, we keep going. And we adjust, and we keep going, we adjust, and we keep going. And so maybe as we reflect tonight, like, what are the adjustments? What are the one or two things that I can adjust? So just offering this for reflection. And of course, I'd love to hear some discussion. I'd love to hear any comments or thoughts or questions that y'all may have. We got plenty of time, so the floor is open. Thank you.